5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
the money,
the all-new Panic Room Radio Show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening. It is the... Hang on, I need to check. It's the 23rd of September, 2020-2021, in the after times. The new Panic Room episode 247, and it's 9:30 Central. And, well, yeah, it's been a week. It doesn't seem like it was that long since we did this before. And it's almost like... It's almost like my own sort of version of hell, I think. It's just this endless repetition. It's like Eternal Sunday and then Showtime and then Sunday again and then Showtime, and this is eternity for me. So thank you listeners for joining me in my own private hell, and it wouldn't be my own private hell without Xtina. Good evening, Xtina. What a great! I hope you understand that I meant that in a sort of a loving way.
I do, and you know, we still have to write the some kind of bizarro where they're stuck in you know, a podcast hell, and yeah, and they have to keep continuing to do the show. The show must go on, and I think it would. I would read it. So we definitely.
We should write that. Where that is there. That's what goes on.
Yeah.
And it keeps going on and on and on and on and on. Yeah.
There's nothing else out there. Yeah, it's just them. It'd be great.
I'm with you. I would definitely. Yeah, I would. I would definitely sit and watch that.
It has been a much better week for me than last week. You know, I had the oral surgery last week, and I was complaining. And I, you know, I have to say, I am sick to death of soup and soft food right now. Like, I'm dying for some real food, but, like, I still can't quite bite too well, you know. So I'm like, and I'm kind of a wuss to begin with, so I probably could do more than I am. But, you know, pretty much we had pizza tonight, and I ate the toppings, which, you know, that's good, too. I mean, who doesn't love the toppings on pizza? But
The toppings are the best bit, to be honest, yes.
It's true, but I'm at the point where I just want real food so bad, you know. I'm just done with soup and, you know, and I've had some really good soups. We go to Olive Garden, and I get, like, the soup from there, and I went to Panera, and they had this cheddar broccoli thing that was amazing.
Oh, I love that. The cheddar broccoli soup is the best.
Yeah.
I like it in Panera. Yeah. They do it in, like, the hollowed-out bread bowl.
I don't have that, but
cheddar broccoli. So obviously you can't have that with, you know, you need to be able to crunch on that, but that with cheddar and broccoli is just fantastic. It really is.
My week has been much better.
I'm boring myself now, to be honest.
But I'm trying to think of any, because we used to talk about, you know, has anybody seen any scary movies or anything? And I'm still, have you seen The Malignant yet? Because I still see everyone talking about it, and either they hated it or they loved it.
It was all right. You know, it wasn't.
Yeah.
I didn't rave about it. I thought Demonic was better. That's pretty good, but it's just like they tried too hard, and it just didn't hit for me. You know, it's like this. I kind of guessed what was going on pretty early on, and then suddenly I said, "Oh, that's something that jumped out." All the lights were popping. Oh, you know, it can control electricity, and that was never mentioned again. It never used that apart from light bulbs popping. It was never mentioned again.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what is it? And then I figured out what it was, and it was just like, nah. I tell you what I've been watching. My new guilty pleasure is Wife Swap, which is brilliant. It is brilliant. What did you get? It's not what you think. Hang on. I've got this fucking fly. I swear, I'm going to get the fucker. We're going to have live on the air fly swatting. It's been literally bugging me. Because we have the puppies and everything that goes with puppies, we get quite a bunch of flies kicking around. But this one, I'm sure it's the same one from last week and the week before. And it's like, oh, it's showtime. I'm going to come in and just harass him. They pick the most contrasting families. I mean, I just watched one last night where they was like very, very strict Christian, you know, family, so strict they wouldn't let their daughters wear pants, because apparently there's something in the Bible that says thou shalt not wearest pants. I don't remember that bit, but hey, if it's in there, it's in there. What?
It is actually in Titus, and it says that women are not supposed to wear what men wear, is basically what it says. So, and that's where they get, you know, men wear pants, so women can't. Yeah, it's in there. It is.
Okay. And then they got this other family. They were sort of satanic rock, you know, punk rock sort of people, and but it's great. Obviously the contrast is excellent, you know. And but it sort of dawned on me, you know, I've watched a few seasons of this show now, that it's not so much wives, it's you know, screwing other people's kids up.
Oh, nice.
Because
that sounds like fun.
Well, no, they try and, you know, give the kids a taste of their life, and they undo. And they typically end up having revelations. Oh, we're going to do things different, and what have you, you know, which is kind of nice. But it shows you just how, I mean, again, whether it's the, you know, the Christian or whatever, you know, the, it's the parents imposing their beliefs and their lifestyle. Even like the old rock and roll parents and the punk rock band, and they have all the band friends round of a night, and they're having keg parties. And they've got, and the kids are pottering around. There's a keg party going on until 4 in the morning, and the kids are pottering. The kids are like, I think it was like 6 and 7. And, you know, I'm a liberal parent, but no, I wouldn't.
Right.
Oh, no, I mean, sensibly, I wouldn't do it. I'd let my kids get away with a fair bit of stuff because I believe in letting them, you know, express themselves. But hanging around a bunch of punk rockers at a keg party, age 6 and 7, I don't think is appropriate. Likewise, not allowing your girls, your daughters to wear pants. And literally, I know they homeschooled them. Again, apologies to any listeners who are devout Christians. Thoughts and prayers to you. And all they were teaching them was Bible stuff. And they started off doing the Pledge of Allegiance, but she changed the words, I pledge allegiance to the Bible. And their ABCs was A for something to do with the Bible and B for something to the Bible. And obviously J was an easy one, I guess, that one. And then kids are there, and you know, it resonated with me because I remember, I think the one and only time my mum packed me and my sister off to it's like a half term Bible school thing at the local church, and I remember, and it was Easter time, and I remember, and I thought at the time I thought it was pretty neat, you know, we were colouring in pictures and drawing pictures of this bloke nailed to a cross. So, of course, you know, being like a 6-year-old boy, you know, I'm going heavy on the blood and the gore and all the shit and that. But on this show, you know, they're there and they do it drawing this, and the father came home. Punk rock guy, and he came home from his regular day job. And he came home and he said, well, it's not appropriate, you know. You're taking them away from the video games because they're violent, and here you are, a drawing there with three instances of murder. You know, you're there literally drawing somebody nailed to a cross, which just highlights the hypocrisy of the whole thing, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but that resonated with me because that stuck with me after all these years. There I was drawing pictures of a guy that they were nailing to a cross, and it's just all wrong. It really is just, you know, I don't know, but I think the theme of the show should be called Kids Swap, because it seems to the kids seem to get, the kids seem to benefit, because they, especially those that are sheltered. This guy said, oh, I'm sheltering my children from all the evil in the world, and well, it's going to get them, it's out there waiting for them, you know. I'd rather my kids be prepared for it, you know.
Definitely.
But the sheltered kids seem to learn from it more, I think.
When my kids were younger, we went to church often, and we knew some families in the church that were, you know, they homeschooled, they were in, you know, the church was everything for them. And hey, if that works for you, that's great. But like, my daughter went to spend the night with one of the girls, and the only thing they could watch on TV was like Little House on the Prairie. And I mean, they were like 12, 13 years old, and you know, Haley came home and she's like, Mom, it was like, you know, I was 8 years old again. We had to go to bed at like 7. And so, I mean, I did feel bad for the kids, because really, what is going to happen when they get old enough and they go out into the world? And, you know, the world is what it is, and they're not prepared, you know. So,
absolutely. You know, my kids, I'm confident they are, you know, more than prepared. Yeah. You know, they're exposed to, and I've made no bones about it. They know the world is a big, horrible, nasty place, and it is, you know, kill or be killed, pretty much. You know, and the more they know about it, the better prepared they're going to be. You know, the good and the bad. So I believe, you know, sheltering your kid. I remember some kids when I went to university. You know, and there's a girl, particularly a girl I was in sort of the group. She was in my zoology course, got to know her quite well, and she was that child who they never had a TV, and she was sheltered, and she was her first year of uni, she was wild, absolutely. She just drinking drugs, you name it. And then I remember talking to her, you know, one time, and she was saying, well, you know, going to school, all the kids that what they're talking about what we saw on TV, I mean, as you do. And she just couldn't join in. So she was isolated. You know, she couldn't connect. You know,
I remember that as well. I told you when I was a kid myself, I was not allowed to listen to rock music. And I remember one time at the cafeteria, you know, at the table, and the kids were like, "What radio station do you listen to?" And I was like, 88.5 AM.
Yeah, Jesus FM.
Like, yeah. And so I definitely felt, you know, a little bit of a ridicule there.
that practice is still alive and well. Again, these Christian families on this show, you know, they do. They only let the kids listen to Christian music stations and Christian this, and they just teach them from the Bible. And it's just, you know, and then they get this you know, woman from this other family who, one, you know, she actually packed them off to school for when it was like her week to change the rules. And it was like, wow, you know, so you could literally see that some of their eyes were open, friends and other you know, take on things other than, oh, it was Bible and the Jesus, you know, and it was great. One other show that you've really, really, really got to watch, it's on
look at
that. On Netflix, Love on the Spectrum. Just season two started, and it's only six shows. It was five for season one, and it's people on the autism spectrum, you know, trying to find love, trying to find romance, and it is so beautiful. I mean, the character, the people they've got are just brilliant. And what I like about it is just they're so bluntly honest. You know?
Yeah.
There's one guy, and he's very socially awkward. He's a lovely guy, big on dinosaur, great guy. And he met this girl, beautiful girl, and that, and obviously he didn't feel the connection. And he phoned her and said, "I would like to be friends," and blah, 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 blah. Why can't everybody like that? I mean, past sort of year or so of dating, I've been ghosted a bunch of times. If any of you are listening who've ghosted me, you are so fucking rude. Seriously.
Yeah.
That is just,
at least
have the balls to say, look, hey, you know, to be fair, there's a lady I've been getting friendly with, you know, she said, look, she'd never been married, never had kids. And finally she said, well, I don't think, you know, and again, having a 12-year-old daughter at home doesn't help, but she was grown up enough to say, I don't think I could take that on, which is great. But the majority just, they go, you know, oh yeah, I'll see you again, da, da, da. Nothing.
Nothing. Especially with adults. You're like, are you kidding me? You know, and that is
you'd think, after you've been on a date and you've been to the movies and, you know, you've got fingers and tops in the back row, that at least, you know, that you get a phone call or something, but just suddenly nothing.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, what was all that about then? You know, I'm close to just giving up. You know, I'm really close to giving up, to be honest. What's the point? What is the point, really?
The next ex is out there. You just got to keep...
that's just what I want, is a third ex. Yeah, because it's becoming a collection then, isn't it? So, enough about my sad little love life. But what have we got going on the show this evening, Xtina?
Oh, this week on the Panic Room, our first segment, we have romance author S.E. Isaac, and then later on in the show, we'll have dark fantasy writer Douglas Nguyen. So it's going to be a great show.
Fantastic. Well, let's crack on. I think they came a bit early there, so I think we'll try that again. It's a distant memory for me, but I hope to have that problem again. So, Xtina, why don't you bring on our first guest?
Our first guest of the evening is romance author S.E. Isaac.
Hello.
Yay.
Hello, you guys. How are you?
Hello. I'm bitter and twisted. I don't like Stina, but more importantly, yeah. How are you? Do we call you S or SE or Sharon or how do you prefer to be called? I'm just guessing.
I mean, you can call me Siobhan. I mean, that's what my name. That's really Siobhan.
I was close, wasn't I? Sharon. Which is good for me. I mean, I know people years and forgot what the name is, and for you they don't twig on. I've you know spent 5 years calling them Oi You, but.
Although the next time you come on the show, he will probably call you Sharon. So, well, you know, there is
it's
that.
It's cool. It's okay. I won't hold it against you.
Right,
thank you.
Right,
much appreciated. Much appreciated. So, Sharon is here to talk to us tonight about her book, Giselle's Trust, The Virgin Call Girls, which is, mm-hmm. I'm interested, that is a sort of a strange title. You're gonna have to explain that. I'm not sure. Either they're very, very bad call girls, or they're just really ugly and they've never actually worked. I mean, fill us in.
Okay, so it's actually so it's a standalone series. So each book can be read by itself or whatever, and it's rather taboo. So each girl in the whatever book you read, like in mine particular, like she's doing. She becomes a call girl for one night at an auction, and she's doing it to get money to help her mom, who's going through cancer. And so basically the virgin call girl is exactly how it sounds. It's girls that are basically selling their virginity at an auction.
Oh, right. Nice. Yeah, and that has actually happened, hasn't it, where girls mm-hmm. have auctioned off their virginity yeah. for a lot of money. But, I love the idea. I mean, and again, it's like... You know, prostitution with a heart, you know, so...
yeah, basically.
Yeah. Prostitution for a good
a
cause. And, well, it is, isn't it? I think it's a bit like Pretty Woman, you know, that sort of, you know, that was all very romanticized and everything, but...
I love that movie.
So, I mean, what was the inspiration for it, Siobhan? Siobhan, isn't it?
Or Sharon, yes. It's cool.
Sharon, I'm gonna. If you don't mind, I've had a rough week. I'm gonna stick with Sharon.
That's fine. It's probably easier.
Thank you.
Well, actually, like, no worries. The series itself was actually I got invited to be part of the series, and that was by the author Shastri Moore, and she came up with it, and then she invited five more of us to come on board, and I was lucky enough to be one of those people. So yeah, it totally wasn't my idea. Like it was kind of outside my comfort zone. I was kind of like, you know what? What the hell? Let's go for it. So and here we are.
Oh wow! So what is your usual comfort zone?
Not so taboo. I mean, I'm not against going the taboo route, but like I said, this is something like totally out there. Like my girl's usually more experienced. But I guess. Yeah, it sounds wrong once you say it out loud, sorry. But like, usually, my characters aren't virgins. They're not innocent. They're more, like, experienced in life, you know, because I'm not young by any means, so I don't really relate to the younger generation, you know, so, yeah. But it's definitely
No, I get that, yeah.
Comfort.
Yeah. Well, it's sometimes it's nice. I mean, did you enjoy stepping outside your comfort zone?
Once I actually pushed myself out there, I really did. At first, I was really worried, oh my gosh, how are my regular readers going to take this? Are they going to be accepting? Are they going to be what the hell are you thinking about? But everyone's been pretty open to it, and so I'm glad I did it.
I want to hear more. Do you have an excerpt for us this evening?
Yeah, I was looking for one that would be, not so bad. So I'm just going to stick with chapter one.
We don't mind it, but we love a bit of steam on this show. So, you know, be as steamy as you like. We don't mind. In fact, we kind of enjoy it in a sort of a wholesome kind of way.
Gotcha. Okay. Would you guys rather hear from the girls' point of view or the guys'?
I'm going to let Christina call. For me, from the girl's point of view, I think, for me.
Yeah, I like that as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I'm just going to go with chapter one. All right, so chapter one, Giselle. Mama, please, I let out a heavy sigh and sunk back into my couch. Mija, you don't need to pay my bills. I could tell by the faintness of my mother's tone that she was on the verge of tears. It's okay, don't cry, Mama. It's only money. You work hard for your money. You should spend it on yourself. I'll be working again in no time. I'll pay you back. It broke my heart to hear her lie to me. I knew she wouldn't be able to pay me back because the doctor hadn't cleared her to go back to work. My mother's cancer had taken a toll on her, my siblings, and their finances. You don't need to pay me back. Please, Giselle, my mother interrupted. When I'm back working again, I'll pay you back. Tell her I can get a job and pay her back, Lydia, my 16-year-old sister shouted in the background. No, my mother and I screamed. No need to yell. Sheesh. I even heard you, Giselle, Lydia sassed, making me laugh at my mother groan. You need to focus on your studies, my mother told her. I know, but Lydia's words drifted. You two are going to make me cry, I sniffled, wiping away a fallen tear. Just accept the money, be happy, and worry about getting healthy, Mama. Money is replaceable. You aren't. Oh, mija, my mother sniffled. Hearing the sadness in her voice and knowing she was crying broke my heart. My mother was a strong woman. When my father left us when I was 5, Lydia was 1, and Luis was only a few weeks old, my mother gathered all her strength and raised us as a single mother. Not once did she show weakness or try to throw in the towel. She was a warrior who took on the world and showed no mercy. Now cancer had turned her into a woman I barely recognized. I have to go. My boss is coming. I love you. Bye. I lied through my teeth and hung up. The tears streamed down my face, and I clenched a nearby pillow. It killed me to lie to my mother. The money that I gave her weekly came easy to me. I barely did anything to make the money. I simply shook my ass to some good music and collected a paycheck. Life of Atlanta stripper. I groaned at the word stripper. Never in a million years did I think I'd end up as a stripper. However, when life decided to strike my mother, I held back no punches. There was nothing I wouldn't do for my mother, Lydia, and Luis. Ding! The sound of my laptop's email notification pulled my attention away from my pity party and to my laptop a few feet from me on the coffee table. I swept the last few flowing tears from my cheeks and then leaned over to see my computer screen. It was an email from Madame Leleuf. I recognized the name. She ran Innocence Abundance Escort Service, an escort service I had heard from one of the dancers at work, Stacy. Stacy said it paid 5 times as much as our paychecks, and we didn't have to be groped by any men. The escort service looked out for the girls. When I asked Stacy why she hadn't applied there, she told me she was no longer rocking the V card. Before I could ask her to explain, she hurried off to the dressing room and onto the stage. We didn't cross paths the rest of the night. However, it didn't stop me from doing my own research later at home on my laptop. Turned out, the V card was a simple way of saying virginity. I was still carrying my V card. I hadn't yet found a man who made my panties drop. Sure, I had seen and dated sexy men, but there was only a physical connection. The emotional and spiritual connection was almost non-existent. After I read through the escort services page, I decided it was worth a shot and then filled out the interest form and submitted a few pictures. That was 2 days ago. I didn't expect to hear back from them so soon, or ever. My eyes scanned over Madame Lewis had just sent. She wanted to schedule me for an interview and a physical exam. All of the applicants had to be screened by the doctor to ensure they were virgins. What, I guess? They were really serious about the word innocence in their company name. But was I really about to let some stranger inspect me? Who the hell am I kidding? I thought as I hit reply to the email and typed, I'm available any day, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Without hesitation, I hit send and sunk back in the couch. I've officially lost my fucking mind. And that's the end of chapter one.
I love it. I do. And I have to say, you know, you started out reading, and I was like, oh, my gosh, she reads like me, because I read super fast, and I can, you know, you joked around. You joked around that you could read your whole book in 5 minutes, and that really is me. So, no, I have to say, you started out, like, really fast, but then you kind of, you know, relaxed a little bit. I think you did great. You did great, so don't be nervous.
I think it sort of fitted what you're reading as well, that sort of anxiety of the girl who was about to make a big life change. And I'm going to have to ask, I mean, this is a debate that I haven't had in a long, long time, is what are your thoughts on prostitution?
For me personally, I mean, it's their body, their business. I mean, being safe about it.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, too. Yeah.
I mean, I understand. I mean, here in Texas, I mean, the law is very, 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 very tight, you know. And I understand. I mean, Houston apparently is the human trafficking center of America.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand the need to protect, you know, the vulnerable, the young, and all the rest of it from the traffickers and whatnot. That I totally agree with that. But like you say, you know, grown-ass adult woman making her own decisions. I personally don't see a problem with it. You know, I mean, it's like anything, though. You know, I mean, did people exploit people, you know, in and out of the sex industry? But no, I'm with you. You know, when it's a woman's body, and it's the whole, I guess, the whole debate about, you know, men making laws governing women's bodies is it's just so inherently wrong. But here, I mean, this is good old Texas. You know, this is the arse end of the Bible Belt and the rootin' tootin' huntin' and shootin' crowd. And it's like living in the 50s. It's, you know, some of the attitudes here is interesting, shall we say.
It's so funny because, yeah, I live in Texas as well, and it's like very, yeah, like some of the things I'm only like 5 hours from you, but like, you know, you can have your guns and, you know, shoot off them whenever you want to, but God forbid you want a casino or, you know, you want whatever else you need, birth control or whatever. So, yeah, it's funny you said that.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, and I must admit, one of the big differences I found coming over from England was that strip clubs here are just awful. I mean, they're just so... No, seriously, no. They're so lame here because there's all these rules that, you know, if they serve alcohol, they can't show a nipple, and it's just like some sad old man or a bunch of sad old men are sat in a little smoke-filled room coming up with these rules, you know? And it's comical, you know. It is indeed, but like you say, if you want, you can go to Walmart and buy a fucking gun. Seriously, you can get, and that was a mind trip for me. It was like going around Walmart. I remember that we'd not been here that long. We were actually going to go get fishing poles for the kids. And, of course, you go in the sporting section, and there's this big, great big gun counter. It's like, so, you know, yeah, I can buy my groceries and what have you, and, you know, I'll have a Glock while I'm here, thank you very much. And it's just like, wow.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so whereabouts are you? If you're 5 hours, you must be Dallas sort of area?
I'm between Dallas, or I'm between, like, Waco and Austin, so I'm, like, right outside Fort Hood.
Oh, right,
center.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep, I know that. I know. I kind of know that area. I've been up there a couple of times. It's there's some nice places up there, actually. So howdy, neighbor.
Howdy.
Howdy.
I didn't realize how close you were. I was trying to guess where you were from, and then I was like, and then you said Texas. I was like, oh, he's a lot closer to me than I thought.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
the accent sort of doesn't say Texas at all, does it? I'm afraid.
That's what I was gonna say. Yeah.
No.
I'm a little bit no.
You should hear his daughter though. She's definitely a little Southern belle. It's really pretty cute.
Oh, she's just broad Texas. Well, she was one when we moved here, so she's been raised speaking Texas, and she's just
Texas,
absolutely
yeah.
Texas through and through. Yeah.
Does she have a cowboy hat and all that stuff and boots?
She did. She had a pink cowboy hat and pink boots, but she grew out of them a couple of years ago. She's going through a goth and emo phase at the moment, so it's all
goth
fishnet
and
black
phase?
And a bit of she's got goth emo. Goth. Yeah.
Like, you know, like sport.
Nice. Oh,
that's
golf.
Quite a thing.
Yeah,
you know,
that should be a thing.
I would watch I would emo golf. I would watch that. I really would. You know, they, instead of hitting the ball, they just sit and contemplate it and get miserable and listen to Leonard Cohen. You know, what a show! It'd be more entertaining than proper golf, wouldn't it?
That's true.
Oh, God,
I would tune
yeah.
in for that.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of kids and their styles, you know, my son. I sent you some videos, James, with him. You know, he's got his metal. He rocks out to the metal. It's like death metal. This is like, you can't even understand the words.
Yeah.
And he's in his Hawaiian shirt. I'm like, he's got to make that a thing. When he's up on stage with his Hawaiian shirts and in death metal, that's just like, that's awesome. Yeah. So he's
look at AC/DC. I mean, Angus made it.
Oh, God.
Their schoolboy uniform, you know, so, hey, you know, why not?
Anything
Why
possible.
The hell not? Absolutely.
Yeah,
rock and roll.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it is.
That's awesome.
So, Siobhan, are you writing any more of the Virgin Call Girls, or was that just one for their series?
It was like a one-time deal. As far as I know, like I said, Shasheree, she hasn't contacted us to say that she wants a part two or anything. So right now, because this one just released, like, not too long ago. So, yeah, so far there's no talk of making a part two, but I'm not against making a part two. If she was to say, hey, you guys, let's get back together, round two, you know, I'd be all for it.
So what are you working on now?
Right now I'm working on, it's called Made to Desire. And it's also with Shasheree. Again, she got me hooked to come on board again for another series. And this time it's Virgin Mate with Billionaire Bad Boys. I know.
Nice.
I know. I'm like, how did she talk me into these things? But, you know, it's fun to get outside the comfort zone.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Virgin Mate with Billionaire. Yeah, you know what? I love to clean. And oh, wait. Yeah.
Hey, there you go.
You got me on the virgin part, though.
I think you've fallen down badly at that one, Xtina, you know. So.
You might be missing that criteria.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Just a little bit,
yeah,
sorry.
Just a little, yeah. You know what? Because it is September. I know it's not quite, you know, the October yet or anything, but, you know, I feel better because last year I had my decorations up already at the beginning of September. And this time I waited a couple of weeks, but I've already done all the decorations and I'm getting super excited for the spooky season. I mean, who doesn't love the spooky season? How about you, Siobhan?
That's my
favorite. Do you like scary? Yes, yes. You
my
know,
favorite.
I mean,
Halloween is my favorite holiday.
I actually love Christmas more, but I'm no, from now.
Oh my gosh.
I know. For me, I think there was something magical that whole month of December. Well, actually right after, Thanksgiving and up until the New Year, that was like, my mom made that magical for me and I still always remember that. And it still happens to the, you know, now. So as soon as, you know, Thanksgiving is up, I just go into Christmas mode and I'm, you know, super excited and I'm already doing a little countdown. I think there's like 93 days left until Christmas, so.
No, shut up.
That's crazy.
I know.
I dread the Christmas time, though. Like, because, like, so I have three boys, okay? And their birthdays are, like, November, December, and January. So come Christmas time, like, I'm ready to cry. I'm like, why? This is, like, the four season for me. So that's why Christmas isn't my favorite. I'll stick with Halloween. It's cheaper. It's a lot cheaper.
Is somebody getting a call? Hello? Maybe I'll hear that noise. Anyway.
Might be the voice.
No. I heard a buzzing. It's not like somebody used to get in a call. It wasn't you, James? Anyway, no.
No, no, I don't think so. Nobody ever calls me.
But no, my son's birthday is in January, so we don't even get like a month recovering before his birthday. So that kind of... Yeah, you go all out for Christmas, and then you're like, I got another birthday before you can even catch your breath for Christmas. So, I'm like so excited. My aunt bought me this really cool doll for like Halloween. It's so cool. I want to keep her out all the time, but she is just super creepy and she doesn't have any eyes. And she looks, it's called the Haunted Doll. I mean, you can look it up on Amazon. It's called the Haunted Doll. And it looks like her clothes are, like, really, really old and dirty. And then she's like, sound activated. So you make a loud noise, and she starts saying, like, really creepy things. And, like, one of them is like, I'm watching you. And then she's got one that says, you know, you dropped me, and I fell and broke, and now I'm mad, or something like that. It's the
what
coolest thing. Ever.
Wow.
I know. I will send you a video because it's super cool and creepy.
I didn't realize she did that. I mean, she's got really big feet as well. She's got big feet, I noticed. What is going on with her feet?
The doll has big feet?
Yeah.
It's just, it might be the picture that I sent you. But
all right.
But they do look a little bigger.
Where did she find this at?
Amazon. It's just Amazon. It's called The Haunted Doll or something like that. But it's so cool.
It wasn't
cool.
Like at a yard sale on the side of the road.
No.
Like, creepy
no,
doll.
You know
so.
What? That's not funny. No.
Well, that's what I thought. I was like, why would you bring this into your house?
Yeah, no. As a matter of fact, I'm such a wuss that had I seen a doll like that outside, there'd be no way it'd be in my house now because I scare myself. We have horror authors on the show often, and they read their scary books and stuff, and I'm like, oh God, I'm never gonna sleep tonight, you know. And we had a couple of like ghost hunters on the show, and again
oh,
at
nice.
The same time, I'm like, I'm never gonna sleep tonight because that stuff just terrifies me. So no, she was store bought, so it's not quite
okay.
as creepy, but still, she's still. I'll send you a picture where she's super cool.
Okay,
but
I'm totally lazy. I want to see.
I'm already trying to figure out what kind of scary movies we're gonna watch this season, and I'm just like, oh, and the since yesterday it's been like chilly outside, so it's going down to like probably the 60s, and today's been overcast. I think maybe we might have reached 70 degrees, maybe, and that's, you know, that's borderline chilly, isn't it? So I mean, I just love this weather and this time of year, and I'm so excited, you know, I am. So, yay.
You wear hoodies?
You know, I don't. I, you know, and I have a really cool Buffy the Vampire Slayer hoodie, but no, I don't know. I get hot way too easy, and so I you know, no, I don't really wear hoodies. You know, and that's an interesting thing. I'm belong to a bunch of groups on Facebook with moms of teenage sons, and they're always talking about the fact that their teenage sons wear hoodies all the time. They're like, it doesn't matter if it's summer, if it's 95 degrees out, you know, they're going to wear a hoodie. And my son never went through that phase, which I'm really glad. So I don't know if that's a thing for you guys. Do your teenagers wear hoodies like nonstop, like all the time?
Yeah, my daughter does. She's always got a hoodie on. And this is in Texas as well. She'll wear a hoodie and it's like 105 out. And usually it's some boy's giving her it or something, and then the next day they fell out. And, just, you know.
Oh, no. The heartache.
Oh, God, yeah.
My 11-year-old wears hoodies. And I'm like, it's like 1,000 degrees out here right now. Like, you need to take that off before you become like a heat casualty. He's like, no, Mom, it's cool. I look good. I'm like, okay, when you're passed out. So, I don't know. Must be like a kid thing.
I think so, yeah. I hate to do this, but I think we're just about out of time for our first segment. But I thank you so much for coming on, Siobhan. You did say this was your first podcast. And
it was. I'm so nervous.
And you did great. You did great. So I can't wait to have you back. You have to promise to come back.
I will. Just let me know when. I'll be
definitely.
Less nervous, and I'll try to read slowly.
You did great.
You did well. More steam next time. It pick us a nice steamy chapter.
Well, now I know, so I'll be more prepared next time. I promise.
Absolutely brilliant.
Thank you guys.
Thank you
thank
so
you,
much.
Bye.
We'll talk
okay.
To you soon.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, Sharon. Bye-bye. Couldn't resist. And it is break time. We'll be right back after these words from our sponsors, probably.
Room Radio Show is brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms, at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read? Check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Xtina at their respective websites, jameslongmore.com for James and darkpoetprincess.com for Xtina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room on social media, Facebook unofficial, The Panic Room Radio Show, our Vimeo channel with all of our previous shows, the new Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
Da! Welcome back to part two.
I think I got it.
Yeah, you're flying.
I think
you got
I got
it.
The fucker. Well, I got one. But that was his buddy. So, but I think I've just got him. So, I'm going to find the body. I'm going to find the body. Going to decapitate it and stick the head on a little cocktail stick and put it by the door as a warning to all the other flies. So, anyway, so how was your break time? That was nice. Always nice. Always jolly that. But I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on. It was great to chat with Sharon, and it's nice that we can touch on some serious subjects every now and then. You know, it's always interesting to see, you know, other people's points of view, even sometimes they're wrong. But
it's true, yeah.
You know, it's all part of the fun of the show. It's like when we to be fair, the only time we judge people on this show is when we do 11 questions and they choose turkey as their favorite lunch meat.
I know.
Turkey
is
a dreadful lunch meat. It really is.
It is. And do you know whose favorite lunch meat turkey is? It's Christian's. The boyfriend, he loves turkey. We go and pick up the lunch meats, and I'm like salami.
No, I didn't get it. It's back. Yeah. It's back. I just pissed it off a bit. It's back. Unless it's another one. But he needs to branch out to something. The roast beef's always a good one. I'm a sucker for a nice Reuben. Reuben on rye.
Yeah.
You know, Schlotsky's, there's a lot of them around here. They do a great Reuben on rye.
Salami.
My agent
is
he's in New York, and he said there's a great deli there that does proper, you know, New York Jewish delicatessen that does proper, said a proper Reuben. So, he's going to take, when I go, he's going to take me. So I'm looking forward to that.
The boyfriend is shouting German bologna. He likes German bologna.
German bologna. it's better than to be honest. I mean, if you're going to eat turkey, better than turkey is probably, you know, the plastic wrapper it came in. It's probably tastier.
I had never had this German bologna. I've only had Oscar Mayer, you know, and I was like, I don't really like bologna. And then I had the German
Oscar
Mayer
is
like,
no. Oscar Mayer.
I was like, wow. Yeah.
Yeah,
whatever the German bologna was really good. I was super surprised. I'm like, this is actually good. I would eat this more. So
Oscar Mayer is not even close to anything real at all.
I didn't.
Ever.
It's all I have.
No.
Anywho.
What happens now? Do we have anything going on now, or is that it? Are we done?
No, you cannot go anywhere yet. No, I'm going to introduce him, and you're going to push the button, and it's going to be nice and smooth, okay?
I'll try not to be premature with the button this time.
Our next guest is dark fantasy writer Douglas Wynn. Woo!
Hello!
Hey, James and Xena, how are you guys doing?
We're doing good. How are you? Well, we're better now. I had a good old moan earlier on, but you know, we're no matter how miserable we are before the show, we always it cheers us up. In some respects, it's sad because that means this is as good as our week gets, I'm afraid. So how's things with you, Douglas?
I love the idea of a decapitated fly head on a toothpick. You need to send a message, my man. That's the way to do it.
Yes, I will let you know if it works. You know, if it just keep them out. But this one, I'm going. Now it's personal. It really is fucking personal. This fly. I swear, it's the same one for the past 3 weeks now. It is. I know it's him. I know it is.
Well, how do you feel about spiders? I have too many. I should send some your way, and they'll take care of it.
Do you know, I would happily accommodate a few spiders if they catch the bloody flies, to be honest with you. I don't mind spiders. I don't mind these flies because they buzz and they're in your face and they're just there and just... And you know that you sat there, and they're crawling on your pizza. You know, 2 minutes before they were crawling on dog shit, and it's like, well, ew.
Exactly.
Ew.
Exactly. My wife and I run a dog daycare when I'm not writing books, and yeah.
Wow.
The flies, you know where they've been. It's not good.
Yeah, well, we're pretty much doing our own because we now have five dogs. We had three, and again, I'm not going to a long story, but our pit bull got herself pregnant by my son's shepherd, so we ended up with puppy. Managed to bring home four of them, and in a moment it's funny, we had like four brown ones and two black ones, and so the pit lab shepherd mix. Only the cute, as you can imagine. Nobody wanted the black ones, two girls. And in a moment of weakness, I the words slipped from my mouth to my daughter. Well, we could keep both of them because that was it then. So we're keeping both. So we now have the five dogs. I mean, obviously the puppies. I mean, obviously puppies being
That's
puppies are. Yes, they are, and obviously we're in the process of house training them. And I mean, luckily we just moved into a. If we're in the house we're in before, we couldn't have done it. But it's a nice big house, huge backyard, so there's plenty of room for them to run around and do all of that. But yes, cool. They are a handful, absolutely.
No puppies for me. Yeah, yikes. There's just too much work. We have three dogs. Three dogs is good. I can't imagine the puppy stage anymore. And they are so adorable, but so much work. They have to make it cute. Otherwise, we would never do it. At this stage of my life, I definitely prefer the snakes. You know, we have the two snakes in the house, and they're such low maintenance pet. You know, I mean, if you don't feel like getting them out that night, which I have to say with the little ones, the baby, I have made it a point to get him out every single night, except for when we feed him, just so he gets really used to us. But, you know, if you don't feel like it one night, you don't have to. And they're just so low maintenance. I do.
Yeah,
it's a great pet for someone who...
Russian. We're speaking of the cold blood, we have a Russian tortoise who's real low maintenance. He'll just hibernate for like a month at a time. Then he'll wake up and decide to chase us around and try to eat our feet back into the habitat. But,
that's awesome.
Yeah, pretty easy compared to dogs.
Yeah, we have two ball pythons, and they're pretty cool. James has got some snakes too there, and big ones.
Yes.
He's got,
We have the two ball python. I mean, my ball python I've had since 1999, so he's getting on a bit. We just got my daughter on this January. Then we have a Burmese python that's somewhere around 12 foot long, so he's pretty big. He's all right.
How is
not eating anyone yet?
How is he doing?
She's doing well, actually. She's eating well. And they do that, you're right. I mean, they grow so quickly. You know, she's just seems to get bit. Every time I see her, she seems to get, I've got a little bit bigger, yeah.
About how long do you say she is?
Which one?
Sorry, Douglas, what was that?
How long? How long is the python? How many feet?
The Burmese is about 12 feet.
Oh wow!
No, he's big. we don't let him run around the house. Put it that way.
Right.
I just have little ones. We have a year old, and it's really weird because she went from, you know, she was small forever, and I thought, I wonder when she's going to get bigger, and then it seems like in the last few months she just became a big. I mean. People say, how big is she? We're going to have to measure her because I'm not really sure. But, like, dick-wise, she really grew, and she definitely looking really healthy. And then we have a teeny tiny little baby. He's about, what is he now, 4 months old, I think? I think we brought him home, well, maybe just three. I think he was 2 months old when we brought him home. And just the cutest little thing, and I love his colors, and no, I think they're great, but he's tiny, and you know, I hold him in my little hand, and it's, you know, he's just like a big worm or something, you know. But
cool.
And I don't think how big? Well, I guess Misha is now over 3 feet. I think the boyfriend says he's reporting to me from downstairs. but it is weird how they went from, like, tiny. She was just a baby, and then, like, boom, all of a sudden, I don't know what happened, but she got bigger, and, yeah, they're really cool. I love having the snakes in the house, I do. And I love to tease our dogs. We have 3 little dogs. I'm like, you know, you step out of line, and you're going to be snake food one day.
Awesome. That's the way.
They don't believe me. Yeah.
Well, my dog hears me talking in the middle of the night right now in my office, and so he started barking, and now the overnight dogs that were boarding have heard him barking, so they've started barking. So I don't think it'll end up in the phone, Mike, but it's a real party.
Yeah, no, we don't hear him at all, which is, you know, there was probably any false move here, and the 3 ankle biters downstairs will start barking too. So, and you just can't get them to stop, no matter. I've stopped yelling because it doesn't do any good. I yell and they just bark louder. So.
Yep. They just think you're barking along with them, right?
Yes, I think so, yeah. So, Douglas, you're here to talk to us about your book, His Own Devices.
Right.
Yeah, when Jessica discovers that her son's digital addictions have lured him into a dark relationship with a psychotic YouTube celebrity, it may be too late to stop a deadly game. Tell us a little bit about it.
So it's a what I think of as a techno-horror novel. I tend to end up writing things that are a little bit cross-genre. So in this case, I've got what's, in terms of pacing and subject matter, mostly a techno thriller or a cyber thriller, but there's also an ambiguous supernatural element in the story. So the YouTuber who is manipulating his young fans through secret messages in a video game back channel of a popular video game, he's in turn being manipulated by shadowy operators behind the scenes who, you know, there may be a malevolent AI involved or occultist hackers who worship the god of chaos. So these things beyond, you know, sort of offstage are driving events, which are really focused on a family, you know, domestic thriller. This woman, Jessica, is married to a soldier who's deployed in Afghanistan. The book takes place in 2016, right before the election. And so these forces that are ramping up the chaos in American life are just getting started. So it was a weird book to write and publish because things that I was writing about started showing up, like QAnon, things like, you know, conspiracy theories, you know, driving the conversation, wasn't something I really was expecting at the time. I'm like, hey, get out of my lane. You know, I'm a fiction writer here. You know, things were getting a little too relevant for me. But, it's a horror novel, but definitely driven by technology, by our addictions to technology and the secrets people, you know, keep in their digital lives, and the ways in which we often are manipulated by unseen forces behind the technology.
I love the idea. I do, and it's weird because all the when I read and stuff, I don't hear a lot of mention of, you know, like YouTube and stuff like that, which is odd because it's so relevant right now. I mean, there's so much, you know, to do in our everyday life, you know, just electronic stuff. And I don't really read a whole lot about it. It's not really it hasn't really made its way, I don't think, into our books as much as I think it probably should at this point. I learned something the other day. Well, no, I guess learned is not the right thing. My son brought it up, though. He's like, in your dreams, do you remember the last time you...
Sorry, Chris. You cut out, Christina? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hello? Oh,
am I here?
We lost you. You're back again.
I can hear you now. I'm here.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was just babbling here. Nobody heard me there. No, I heard you.
You were just getting to the best bit, and then you cut out.
I was following. It started to cut out right around you. You were talking. You mentioned dreams. I think.
Yes.
How often do you pick up your phone? Like, it's constantly pretty much attached to your hand, right? When was the last time you dreamed about it? Like, do you dream you're holding your phone in your hand? And then I just thought that was really interesting. Like, I'm like, no, I don't remember ever having my phone ever in my dream, which is, as often as we have it as a part of ourselves, it's almost like it's attached to us all the time. But I don't think we dream about it at all.
I wonder how universal that is to just omit your dreams subconsciously for some reason, even
there.
Though you're right, we're just constantly touching these things.
Yes. I mean, it gets so bad that I have to consciously make the decision to put it down and then flip it over because you see like a notification. And if you're not doing anything, even if you are doing something, that's the bad part. That's what it gets me is that I'm busy. I'm talking to somebody and I'll see a notification and I'll flip to it. I'm like, oh, that is so rude. You know, so I definitely have got to
constantly vying for our attention.
Away. Yeah, it's become, scary almost.
But, it's funny, I thought a lot about the fact that horror has been sort of undermined in many ways, horror stories, by everyone always having a phone, always having a cell phone. You know, you've got to kind of come up with these scenarios in which your characters can't have that lifeline, right, where they can't just call for help or text somebody. They can't always be in communication. If you want horror, you've got to some extent, isolate your characters. And so I thought, well, what if we flip that, and it's actually that communication line, that device, that's the source of the evil.
Yeah,
which I think
we all know
it really is, right?
Yeah.
On some level.
Well,
they say, any tool can be used for good or ill, right? You can cook with a knife or kill somebody. But, the phone definitely is that kind of double-edged thing.
Yeah. Definitely. I want to hear more. I think we have a clip to play. Do you need to set it up at all, Douglas?
I don't think so. This is chapter one. It's the beginning of chapter one, so it should do the work on its own. Thanks.
Right. Well, I will I'll hopefully press the right button. Here we go.
Chapter one. Jessica's first thought is that she's alone in the bed. Her second is that the washing machine is banging against the wall on spin cycle. But that can't be right. She didn't put a load of laundry on before bed, so what's that thudding? She tosses the rumpled sheet aside and props herself up, blinking as the vacancy hits her with double force. Even in sleep, she knows Matt is deployed, but where's Gavin? She's been letting him sleep in her bed this week because of his nightmares. Did he wake and return to his own? She gets up, swaying a little on unsteady feet, her skin prickling in the air-conditioned room. Maybe he was cold, but he likes the AC, begs for her to turn it on even when they don't need it. He's more likely to just burrow into his threadbare security blanket, the one Matt brought home from his first tour in Afghanistan, than to leave when the room gets too chilly in the night. The blanket is missing too, suggesting he's not in the bathroom. Jessica listens anyway, for a flush or the sound of water running in the pipes. The thudding that woke her has ceased. But she's sure it was really there, not merely the remnant of a dream following her into the waking world like a mosquito slipping into the house on her carbon trail before she can shut the screen door behind her. Real, but not the washer. So what was it? Now she's awake, and maybe the goose flesh on her arms isn't entirely from the temperature of the room. She opens the bedroom door, letting the cold air out, and prompting Cooper, their elderly corgi, to perk up on his plush bed and utter a half-hearted growl. The thudding in the wall starts back up, and she breaks into a run, down the hall to Gavin's room, Cooper barking at her heels. She finds the bedroom door open just a crack, revealing a wedge of darkness beyond the reach of the hallway nightlight. She almost pauses at the threshold, the notion flitting through her racing mind that she should knock before entering. But he's only 10, too young for privacy. And then she's through the door into the darkened room, and what she finds there stops her in her tracks. Gavin sits on the bed, his back to the wall, the security blanket draped over his head reminding her of a Halloween sheet ghost without the eye holes, his inscrutable face glowing through the finger-worn fabric, lit from below by the tablet resting in his lap. His body jerks with convulsions, the back of his head rapping against the wall, the mattress bouncing on its springs. Jessica's breath hitches in her chest. Cooper barks, a sharp sound that snaps her back into action, and then she's on the bed, tugging the blanket off her son, afraid she'll find him bleeding from his nostrils or his ears or, God forbid, his eyes, as if the radiation from the device in his lap could fry them in their sockets. An insane notion, but it comes to her readily this deep in the night, so close to her own troubled dreams. The boy shudders in her arms as she untangles him, his forehead knocking against her temple. Is he dreaming? Thrashing like the dog running in his sleep? With arms under his shoulders and knees, she drags him away from the wall the same way she moves him when he falls asleep in the middle of her bed during story time. Only now it's not the dead weight of a sleeping boy, but a kicking thing that barely resembles him, fingers hooked into claws and eyes rolled back into his skull. She can see the whites in the murky dark by the faint glow of a street lamp filtered through the curtains. She should have switched the light on when she entered, but now she's afraid to let go of him. Something knocks against the floor, the iPad tumbling out of the tangled blanket. An icy shimmer plays over the ceiling for a second. She catches a glimpse of black feathers tumbling across the glass before the magnetic case slaps shut with the familiar click. Jessica realizes she's trying to hug the tremors out of Gavin. A futile effort. She needs to stop and think, get a grip, or she'll do the wrong thing. So far, all she's accomplished is to stop him banging his head against the wall. The terror of helplessness, of not knowing what to do next, is closing in, making it hard to breathe, and she curses Matt for being half a world away. She lets go of the thrashing body and turns away from the bed, grazing something with her elbow as she rises and knocking the lamp from Gavin's nightstand. She paws at the wall. Shit, shit, shit. Her fingers catch on the switch, and the lamp comes to life on the floor, lighting the room from the wrong angle and splaying the silhouette of a plush penguin across the ceiling, the beak looming above them like the blade of a scythe. Gavin writhes on the bed in his pajama pants, chest bare, lips blue, drool glistening on his chin in the stark light. From his throat, a long, guttural sound escapes.
Okay, that was seriously creepy. Is that over?
Yeah.
You were asking
awful.
For a 5-minute clip, and when I listened to chapter one, I realized that the 5-minute mark is right when you make that sound. I thought, oh, well, there you go. That's
perfect.
Perfect.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
I got chills though. Yes, I need to know what happens next. So when you make up the signed copy, that's XTINA.
All right. Yeah, I've been recording the audiobook all summer, and so it was good timing that you were asking for a clip. That was easy.
Yeah, you're going to do your own audiobook. That's awesome. You know.
Yeah, boy,
I
regret that decision. I've in the past usually, the publisher just partners with somebody, or I do, with a narrator. And I used to be an audio engineer. I went to school for audio engineering, and I thought, well, I've got the tools. I could do this. And, 4 months later, ripping my hair out, finishing the edits, it's just so time-consuming, But it's been fun. I mean, someday when I'm dead, my family will have 8 hours of my voice reading one of my books. So why not?
That's exactly why my daughter says she does not listen to the show, because she's like, when Mommy is no longer here, she'll have hours and hours and hours to listen to me.
There you go.
So
a little morbid, but you know.
I know, right? Right? It's her excuse not to listen in on the show. Is what I think, but it works. So no, I think that's really cool. I love that. You know, with Hellbound, I am in charge of the audiobook department, and it sometimes it's really difficult to make sure that the authors know that you're not going to hear this exactly the way you wrote it, because it's not you performing it, you know. And
exactly.
I mean, sometimes you know, there have been times that I have heard an audition or something, and I'm like, man, they did such a great job, I loved it. And the author is like, nope, don't like it at all. And I'm like, oh, gosh, you know what I mean? So it's because they hear it different. And
you've had this voice in your head your whole life as a writer.
Yes.
It's the cadence of your own writing voice. And so it's just awkward for writers to hear other people read their stuff. It's just always going to be. But it doesn't mean that the narrator isn't killing it as a performer.
Yes.
You know, especially if you've got a voice actor who can really, you know, modulate things in that way. For me, it's more like a songwriter singing his own song. You know, it might not be what you're going to get from a really amazing singer, but I think, you know, there is that cadence. There is also just, you know, the emotional component coming across as it was written, right? So just two different ways of coming at it.
I had a couple of excerpts of my poetry done by a voice actor, and she did a great job. But while I'm hearing her recite the poetry, in my mind, I'm, you know, saying it right along with her. And there are times I'm like, oh, she didn't quite enunciate that part the way that I do. And I'm like, well, that, you know, she's not me. So,
right.
But yeah, it is really, it's definitely weird. It's, but in an interesting, in a cool way. So,
Yeah, I've certainly learned some things about my writing from having to read an entire book of it on a microphone. it'll certainly cure some run-on sentences when you're trying to get a breath. You know?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. That's definitely something that I think more authors should do, is read their stuff out loud. That way you can hear if there's any, you know, if there's a weird sentence here or there, or something just doesn't, you know, sound right, because it makes a huge difference. And I think sometimes you just have a tendency just to write it and you don't even, I don't know, you don't go back to read it afterwards or something. And I'm like, do you read that sentence? You should really read that sentence. So it's a lot of fun. So what are you working on now, Douglas?
Well, so in the audiobook, this year I've been putting together a short story collection. Hasn't been announced by the publisher yet, but I think that's coming any week now. So that should be out in the spring, I'm told. And this is a collection of stories I've written over about 10 years of writing Lovecraft mythos horror stories. I've published a trilogy of novels called The Spectre Files, which is influenced by the Lovecraft mythology, the Cthulhu mythos. And so along the way, I started getting invitations to write short stories for anthologies that were themed in that area. And I'm a slow short story writer, so it took a long time for them to add up to most of a book. And then I added a few new pieces as well, some long ones. So some of them tie into my novels in interesting ways. And looking forward to finally, after several novels, finally getting out my first short story collection. I'm kind of doing it backwards.
Awesome. I hate to say this, but I think we are out of time for our show. You know, every time we play around with, you know, making the show longer, and every time I'm like, no, we're fine, but we run out of time every time. So, but it's because we're having so much fun. You have to promise to come back and see us.
Certainly will. Thanks so much for having me on. This was a blast.
Yay. And let us know real quick where we can find you online.
My website, douglaswynn.com, is a place where you can actually download for free, if you join my mailing list, a novella, which is a prequel that sets the stage for this novel we've been talking about, His Own Devices. So that's called Random Access, shorter book that you can grab off of my website. That also has links to all of my social media.
Awesome, awesome. So all of our listeners, go out and buy His Own Devices by Douglas Wynn. And, we can't wait to have you back. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Have a great
night. Yeah, been an absolute pleasure. Have a great evening.
Take care,
Douglas. Okay, Douglas. Bye-bye. You're right. Time just, you know, if we double the time of the show, we'd still run out of time, you know. But, it is, unfortunately, it is time to say goodnight, Xtina.
Good night, Xtina.
Good night.
One can tell. Oh yeah, I'm the great pretender. Pretend that you're